Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this week's episode, we're talking about the FDA's history with vaccines.
So grab your emergency authorization.
And let's get civical. Hello, everybody.
Oh, hello.
Welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I'm Lizzie Stewart.
And I'm Arden Walentowski.
And today, we are not alone, both metaphorically and literally. We are graced by two sisters, they're our cousins, they're our family. They live under the More Banana family. You probably know their very successful podcast, Scam Wow. We are joined by Caitlin and Sue from Scam Wow.
What's up? Thanks for having us, sisters, sister wives.
Oh my God.
So nice to be a part of the sister wife community.
Does anyone watch
it's
this?
So good.
I have so much to talk to about. I need someone to talk to about sister wives. There's so much to say.
I love sister wives so much. I haven't watched it in many, many years, but I remember when it first came out, I thought as a young pup, this is my show.
For some reason,
so
I've
where
stuck
are we
with
now?
It for like 10 years. I've stuck with
That's
it.
That's amazing.
Damn.
Bring us up to date. I check headlines and I check other people's feedback, but I want to know where are we right now in the sister wife universe.
Are you okay with me spoiling it for you, or are you going to get
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're at a point now where we just had a season finale and one to two sister wives out of the four may break off from the family.
Whoa.
No one wants to do polygamy anymore. They're over
That's
it.
That's what you want. Mm-hmm. That's what you want in a sister wife story.
Yeah.
For them to run away. Mm-hmm.
To make like a new sister wife family. Are they going to, do you think they're going to break off together, or they're going to break off like and just go their own way?
I don't think they will. So some of the wives are at a point where their children are having children. So Christine wants to move back to Utah to dote on the grandkids. Mm. And
oh, who doesn't?
No sure. one else. Is like they are the rest of the family's in Flagstaff. No one else wants to move again. So Christine's like, peace, I'm out of here. Which Christine, I thought, was the one who was the most happy. So it's been a shocker.
But there's nothing like a grandbaby. Grandbabies will change everything.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
You're right.
My grandpa Poppy stopped smoking his whole life as soon as I was born.
Oh.
Quit cold turkey.
You
wow.
did it.
Wow. Yep.
Look what you did. Pretty impressive.
You're very it present.
Influencer.
So somebody could move to Utah. That's what I'm saying.
So this is an amazing place to transition to sort of our topic.
You're
of
welcome.
Today. Thank you, Sue.
You were your guest, and it's
you
gonna
were like,
get nuts.
Let me give you a diving board in which to leap off of. And so obviously, if it's not clear to you yet,
transitions right into
the history of the FDA.
It's just, it's so seamless. What more could you ask for?
It is so seamless.
We are talking about the FDA today, specifically in the scope of more on the vaccine side. As I know Arden and I have learned in researching this, the FDA...
They do
sort of
18,000 things. Yeah, they do a lot.
They're monitoring too much, I think. Like, there's no wonder things fall through the cracks, in my opinion, because you can't monitor food and drugs and God knows what else and shoot 100% every time. So that's
too much.
That's too much. It's too much. But because it's too much, we had to narrow our focus just a bit. And since, I don't know, there's a pandemic going on, it seemed as good a time as any to take on the sort of drug element of the D of the FDA, if you will.
Great.
So before we jump in, Arden, do you want to tell our listeners what our Saoirse Ronan sources are today?
The Saoirse Ronan sources. This is coming from the FDA. I mean, thank God. Where it's just such a relief to have a government website that tells you things about what they do.
Sure.
The FDA, the CDC, and then I think, I don't know where yours came from. Is that where yours came from too?
Yeah, mine also came from the FDA and the CDC. Fucking I thought rockin'. Where else do you go?
Where else ladies? Are you going to go? Where else are you going to go? Yeah. So straight from the horse's mouth.
So Arden, would you like to start us off with a brief little history, or herstory as we like to call it, of
thank you.
FDA. Mm-hmm.
FDA. Oh my God.
FDA.
I feel like people would be much more into the FDA if she was called FDA. Are you kidding me? FDA needs her own song and YouTube channel.
She has it.
She has it.
She has a ton of TikTok followers.
So a little history of FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. The Biologics Control Act of 1902 was enacted by Congress to ensure the protection of Americans by providing consistently safe biological products. Great. Thanks. Things shouldn't kill us. We love this. The act not only serves as the underpinning for today's regulation of biological products, but also marks a historic turning point in the way America protects the health of its citizens. So it was the act that was like, maybe we should test things before we insert them into people's bodies.
Why not? Throw it.
Why not? A thought. Off the top of the head.
In 1902, turn of the century, we're drowning in steel. This is 10 years before the Titanic is going to sink. So we're different people. We have a pep in our step. Let's just try to keep them alive.
Let's keep them alive.
Yeah.
Let's keep them alive. The first comprehensive federal consumer protection law was the 1906 Food and Drugs Act, which prohibited misbranded, adulterated food, scandalous, foods and drugs, and interstate commerce. Arguably the pinnacle of the progressive era legislation, the act nevertheless had shortcomings, which were gaps in commodities it covered, plus many products it left untouched. And many hazardous consumer items remained on the market legally. So they were like, okay, if you mess with it, we're going to try and regulate you. But they missed some steps, and there were lots of things still out there that were harming people. But at least we had a law, a group of people who were like, let's try and look at
this. It's coming from a good place.
It's coming from a good place.
Like most psychopaths, they believe themselves.
It's true. Yes. It's true.
A place of love, a place of intention.
It all starts somewhere nice.
Yeah. The political will to effect a change came in the early 1930s, which was spurred on by growing national outrage over some egregious examples of consumer products that poisoned, maimed, and killed many people. I mean, yes.
Maimed?
Maimed. I feel like maimed people, yeah, that's a problem.
Like,
there were a couple machetes that they were like,
I was about to say, what could maim you? Like, I mean, talk about the early stages of Tylenol where it would blow off half your face. Like,
wait, is that real?
No, no, that's
fully made up. Where have I been?
Tylenol, don't come
But Tylenol had some shit in it once. They were like, there was a scandal.
That's the Tylenol killings where, like, somebody poisoned, which was not Tylenol's fault. Okay, quick history lesson for us girls.
Sidebar.
In like the 90s or the 80s, there was a series of people dying because somebody had tampered with what I think was Tylenol packaging and had like put, I think it was cyanide pills in them. And yes,
did they tamper
ladies.
In the factory or like in the CVS or people?
I think in the
called.
CVS. In the because CVS. This was before you had the seal. So these killings prompted the seal we know and love today.
Wow.
So, look it up. Tylenol murders. There's a great Forensic Files on it.
If you I would have been dead so many times over. I take so much Advil and Tylenol. Yeah. I am like crushing painkillers these days.
Never take something that doesn't have a seal on it. Yeah, that's supposed to protect. That's supposed to let you know, like, oh no,
because it will have cyanide. Doesn't
bring
the
seal with him.
Yeah,
it will have cyanide in it. Absolutely.
He'll kill you.
Okay, that was my sidebar.
That's a great sidebar.
Thank you.
We stop for true crime always. The tipping point came in 1937 when an untested pharmaceutical killed scores of patients, including many children, as soon as it went to the market. The enactment of the 1938 Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act tightened controls over drugs and food, included new consumer protection against unlawful cosmetics and medical devices, and enhanced the government's ability to enforce the law. This law, as amended, is still in force today.
And this, what they talk about, this killing is not the Thailand. There's been multiple.
There's been multiple.
Like I said, we've not gotten this fully right over the course of these, 120 years? This pharmaceutical, I imagine this pharmaceutical literally was straight cyanide that they were like, maybe this cures headaches, and then realized that it killed people.
It's like, let's just test it out on our people. And
let's just see
who floats.
Let's see who floats.
The next sort of thing we're going to talk about, just this is a very brief aside in the notes, is we're going to talk about the Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, or CBER, as they call it. CBER. So for more than 100 years, what is now known as the FDA's Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, or CBER, has played a significant role in ensuring the safety and, oh, I hate this word, efficacy of the fruits of these scientific discoveries. CBER is responsible for the regulation of biologics, which are medical products such as, you guessed it, vaccines, blood and blood derivatives, allergenic patch tests and extracts, HIV and hepatitis tests, gene therapy products, cells and tissues for transplantation. God, I can't believe I gave myself this note. And new treatments for cancers, arthritis, and other serious diseases. So again, I think too much.
Yeah. It was one guy doing it all. Was he like, don't worry, I've got it. He's got like a huge ego. He's like, look, I'm real good with his shoes. So yeah, I'll take it.
He's got, like,
my wife
speakers.
Says that I'm really bossy. I can handle
it. Yeah, I've got it. Don't worry. And so CBER reviewed the first vaccines to immunize. Hold on. Immunize?
Immunize.
You know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Persons against infectious diseases such as polio. Oh, my goodness. I'm not going to say the scientific name. The whooping cough. And German measles. CBER research led to important discoveries to safely collect, prepare, and transfuse blood and blood plasma. So that's just a little subsection of the FDA that is doing a lot of the research and stuff that are creating these treatments and whatnots for all of these diseases that we know and love, really.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love German measles. Who doesn't?
Mm. I mean, eins, zwei, drei,
what a gem.
Honey. It's the only thing I know in German. It's 1, 2, 3.
It's the measles.
Ich liebe dich, baby. That's all I know.
Okay.
I love you.
Aw, okay. That's so cute. Wait, say it again.
Ich liebe dich.
Ich liebe dich.
So good. Ich liebe dich.
Oh my God, I'm going to say that for
my
forever.
Grandmother taught me that.
Is your grandmother German?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. So, Arden, you pulled this note, and this is just the title of the note. The St. Louis Tragedy, an enactment of the 1902 Biologics Control Act. So I'm excited to learn about the St. Louis tragedy, because what happened in St. Louis?
Yeah.
It was kind of nuts. So in 1901, diphtheria patients were routinely treated with an antitoxin derived from the blood serum of horses. This already sounds like a gem of a plan. This sounds so just right on the money. The horse serum was manufactured in local establishments with no central or uniform controls. Even better.
No. You can't do anything with horse serum locally. You need to import
rules with horses. As somebody who's ridden a horse, sure. You need some rules. You need a saddle. You need a bridle. You just like, you need couple things.
But yeah. Who even thinks about that?
Literally straight white men of 1901. There was nobody else at the table.
Nobody.
And yes. Also in 1901, maybe horse semen was like flying all over the place. Like now they test on like mice and monkeys and like all these other sort of like other animals. Maybe horse semen was like the easiest animal byproduct to get.
I just imagine a visual of horse semen flying all over the place.
And that's what I was hoping for. Thank you, Caitlin. Just like wild.
So wow, crazy. St. Louis is off to a wild start.
A wild start.
Guys, it's crazy there. Mm-hmm.
So in St. Louis, Missouri, the blood of a tetanus-infected retired milk wagon horse named Jim. Yep.
No.
That's a lie. I'm glad we know his name. That's a really important detail.
It's very important. I just feel like...
Who looks at a horse and goes, Jim? Like, this true. Is Jim.
It's probably named after their dead grandpa.
I have a tangent here. Is it some people are naming their animals... people names, like there's a missing cat in my neighborhood named Kevin, and I am not here for it. I don't like it. Name your cat like,
oh my god,
crackers or something. Okay, I can't stand that too. Yeah, I hate it.
My ex coworker, her dog was named Kevin, and then every dog in their family was also named Kevin.
No, it's
so
not
it's always
cool.
Where's Kevin? Like in Home Alone.
It's not cool or cute. It's give them a fun animal name. Okay.
Yeah,
it's constant.
My dream is to have a cat and name it Butter.
I love.
That's great.
Great.
Thank I love you. This dream for
yes.
you.
Thank you.
I love it.
That's my dream.
A food-themed animal name is always good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I'm with you on that. There's something not quite right by being like, Charlotte.
Right.
Come here.
Yeah. Right. My friend has a cat named Emma. Like, what are you doing?
Oh. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Okay. I'm really.
No. Get this out now. This is the place. This
get
is the
it
place.
Out. Get it. Get
so,
it.
So, yeah. Wow. Jim.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Jim, yeah. We salute
so,
you.
Jim, poor Jim, sure. RIP, I'm for sure he's dead. He didn't know that he had tetanus, but he did. And the milk wagon horse that they pulled the serum from to give to the, he was the guy that they pulled it from to give to the diphtheria patients. So they're giving the diphtheria patients tetanus infected serum. By late 1901, the situation erupted into tragedy. Of course it did. When 13 children who had been given diphtheria antitoxin died of tetanus.
Oh my god. Yeah. Jim was a murderer.
Jim That's murdered so, the children.
Crazy that, like, yeah, but I feel like in 1901, Jim. Everybody just is dying. Right? Like, kids are just, like, falling out of carts. And, like, I just feel
almost like
yes.
2021.
Yes.
Right.
Our so sister in spirit, 1901.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Our sister wife of history is also dying.
So in response, in 1902, Congress enacted the Biologics Control Act, which we talked about, known as the Virus Toxin Law, which gave the government its first control over the process used for the production of biological products. The first regulations under this act became effective on August 21st, 1903, and mandated that producers of vaccines be licensed annually for the manufacture and sale of vaccines, serums, and antitoxins. Okay.
We love a response.
We love a response.
Yeah.
The death of children.
We're stepping up to the plate.
Love it.
Manufacturing facilities were also required to undergo inspections, and licenses could be revoked or suspended when necessary. Production was to be supervised by a qualified scientist.
It's good they said qualified.
I know. Yes. It's good that we have standards.
You gotta specify. Because it could be any scientist.
Could be anybody.
Yeah.
I'm a scientist when you break me down into my sort of
You have solved many murders.
Investigative crimeologist, whatever you want to call it.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. We're all the same.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We are all the same.
So then all product labels were required to include the product name, expiration date, and address and license number of the manufacturer. These new controls marked the beginning of a basic change in America's federal public health policy and a steadfast commitment to the protection of public health. Sure, they're like, which batch is this serum from? This one made people sick. Let's pull all of that from the shelves. I like this idea. I love a recall.
Recall it.
Initial recall.
Hmm.
Then additional legislation that was passed that eventually would provide for further protections for recipients of biological products. In 1906, the Federal Food and Drugs Act was passed, which outlawed, like we said, adulterated and misbranded foods and drugs, but made no reference to biological products. This act was later replaced by the 1938 Food, Drugs, and Cosmetic Act. After 1938, the appropriate provisions of the 1902 and 1938 Acts were used to regulate biologics. So at first they were like, okay, just this, the foods and other things that like people will consume. And then they were like, how about the things we put in our bodies? And they were like, yeah, seems a good idea.
Throw it in there.
The vaccines and the drugs. I like
make an
idea.
Amendment. Put it in the drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that they tacked on cosmetic.
I know.
Like, now is your...
And as an afterthought, great.
Like, yeah. Oh, wait. Cosmetics, throw that in. Write that in. Quickly scribble it down. And then they voted and they were like, okay, great. Perfect.
Was this back when they, like, when, was the powder still, like, eating people's faces back then? Is this that time period? Remember that?
I mean, this was, what, 1938? Mm-hmm. Anything's possible. We're coming Anything's out of possible. The Great Depression. It's before World War II. Was the powder eating the face? I don't know. Was the powder good for the face? Probably not.
Probably not.
So makeup, I do think, was coming very much into the fold for sure at this point. So speaking of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938, great year for me. It did a couple of things that I'm just going to quickly go over before we really get into some meat on vaccines. So this act extended control to cosmetic and therapeutic devices, which we love to see. I wonder if this was because of World War One and like soldiers coming back and like needing therapy, physical therapy. I don't know. Just a thought.
I hope.
Yeah. I hope so. The next thing that it did, required new drugs to be shown safe before marketing started, which was a new system of drug regulation. So you can't make the pretty posters until you tell me and prove this doesn't kill anybody or give them something bad. It provided that safe tolerances be set for unavoidable poisonous substances. Nice. You have to... You have to say you can only put this much of cyanide in everything. No more.
No more. There's a maximum level of poison.
They didn't want to overstep, you guys. They just didn't want to overstep. They're like,
no lethal amount of poison in the drugs, ladies. It authorized standards of identity, quality, and fill of containers for foods. It authorized factory inspections. And it added the remedy of court injunctions to the previous penalties of seizures and prosecutions. So... this really, again, this was a massive piece of legislation and sort of like when you have the original thing in the early 1900s, then we kind of refocus and rebrand in 1938, and that'll happen a couple of times, and it's still happening. Like, they're still updating this same legislation to be like, and this, and the children, and blah, blah, blah. Because if you can imagine, what they said in 1938 had to change as we got a little more modernized, if you will. So, Arden, do you want to talk about the FDA and vaccines?
Sure.
Are you sure?
I think I'm sure. So before vaccines are approved by the current Food and Drug Administration, scientists test them extensively to ensure that they are safe and effective. Plus...
that's important to know.
It's so important. Vaccines are the best defense we have against infectious diseases, but no vaccine is actually 100% safe or effective for everyone because each person's body reacts to vaccines differently.
Who would have thought?
Before vaccines are licensed by the FDA, they are tested extensively in the laboratory and with human subjects to ensure their safety. First, researchers use computers to predict how the vaccine will interact with the human immune system. Then researchers test the vaccine on animals, including mice, guinea pigs, rabbits, and monkeys.
I wonder if there's like a status of the animals, like if they start on one and then move up to like the bigger ones. Like, I'm curious. I'm not a fan of this, obviously.
Yeah.
But I am curious about, like, because they've listed several, obviously, different animals.
Like, by the time they get to a giraffe, he's like, ugh.
Ugh.
hope they miss me by now. It's
like
by the time
the monkeys were like ready to go, or, you know, I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. I imagine you start on mice and you work your way up.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
No, I don't think so. Mice have certain things that are really similar to ours. And like, there's, because like we didn't come from monkeys. We came from, I only know this because my brother's a huge researcher. We came from something else. It's like another form of ape or something, but because I have seen and read of like studies done just exclusively on mice before then they bring it to people. So you didn't, you did not have to do like, if they test a medication for, let's say, like not an amoxicillin but something like a what is it for your metabolism or something, or let's say you have a thyroid issue, they can actually do something where, I actually read this about sugars too, they can trick mice and have mice develop something that's similar to somebody who has a diabetes, so it can almost, their systems can almost identically mimic the way we would break, our bodies would break down, basically our liver would break down diabetes, I think so, guys, sorry, I'm not a doctor. And then they would give them the medicine, and so then if that worked, it was close enough to a mimic to ours that they don't then use it on monkeys or dogs or anything else.
But like, deep down inside, aren't we all mice? You know what
we
I mean?
All are mice. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We've all been watching mice. Disney our whole lives. We're mice.
Hello.
Yeah. We are
Gus,
mice.
Gus.
Yes. Gus. Mm-hmm. Gus.
Gus. Gus. The protagonist of Cinderella. We all know it.
Gus.
Gus.
If only.
Gus. Gus. Oh my God.
Right, but that's a better point, Sue, that we are all actually mice.
We are. Yes. No. It's not a better point.
At the end of the day.
No. There are no better points.
No. They're all equal points. We are all mice.
So after they tested on the animals, they move on to vaccine development and approval, the same general pathway as for drugs and other biologics. A sponsor who wishes to begin clinical trials with a vaccine must submit an investigational new drug application, known as an IND, to the FDA. Phase one trials are small, involving only 20 to 100 volunteers, and last only a few months. The purpose of phase one trials is to evaluate basic safety and identify very common reactions.
Sure, that makes sense.
Phase two trials are larger and involve several hundred participants. These studies last anywhere from several months to 2 years and collect additional information on safety and efficacy. Data gained from these two phase two trials can be used to determine the composition of the vaccine, how many doses are necessary, and a profile of common reactions.
Love. Good.
We learn and grow.
It's trial and error and trial and error and trial.
And plenty of error.
And
yes, so much
another
error.
Trial.
So much error.
Tons of errors.
And so
only
much
error.
So much error. Phase three trials are the next step, unless the vaccine is ineffective or causes health problems, and they're expanded to involve several hundred to several thousand volunteers. Typically, these trials last several years. Because the vaccinated group can be compared to those who have not received the vaccine, researchers are able to identify true reactions.
Okay, great. Sure.
If the clinical trials demonstrate that the vaccine is safe and effective, the manufacturer submits a biologics license application, so many letters and words, or a BAL to the FDA requesting two licenses, one for the vaccine, a product license, and one for the production plant, an establishment license. During the application process, the FDA reviews the clinical trial data and proposed product labeling. In addition, the FDA inspects the plant and goes over manufacturing protocols to ensure vaccines are produced in a safe and consistent manner. Only after the FDA is satisfied that the vaccine is safe is it licensed for use in the general population, which we now all have experience with. We've all gotten those alerts.
Sure. I've never been so involved with vaccine authorization.
Seriously.
It's crazy.
Once they started rolling out, it was like, oh my God, freedom. Once FDA licenses a vaccine, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices develops recommendations on how to use vaccines to control disease in the United States. Phase four is safety monitoring and research, and that begins after a vaccine is licensed and recommended for public use. So they're still like watching it. They're still like, okay,
sure.
People are getting this vaccine. We're still going to keep an eye on what happens with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, famously, we just had one get put on pause because of some potential side effects. So it is, yeah, it is interesting to remind oneself that, like, it's not just that we authorize it and then that's it. It's like,
that we do
go
track
ahead,
it.
You're
yeah.
out of the nest.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like Hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it.
So with sort of the, like, the base of vaccine, how vaccines come to be under our belt, let's talk about historical vaccines. This is, yes. I love this stuff. I love it so much. I love to go back and think, what were the diseases we were worried about in the past? So let's start off with the heavy hitter that we all know and love, polio.
Love her. The belle of the ball,
I love her
polio.
So much. I know, honestly, she is getting very much brushed to the side, and we need to give her her light back. So
let's focus on polio. Let's give it its due.
Let's give her focus. Absolutely,
it's her time.
Vaccine research flourished as new techniques for growing viruses in tissue culture were discovered. So this is all when polio was happening. We're trying to discover the vaccine for polio. An intense focus on vaccine-related research was polio. This highly contagious disease paralyzed or killed its victims, and children were especially vulnerable. Americans, shout out to us, were frightened of this disease and were eager to have a vaccine. Does this sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Jonas Salk's polio virus vaccine had to be tested, so this vaccine had to be tested on in human trials before licensing. So there were no animals for this one. Injections were given to 1.8 million children, making it the largest clinical test of a drug or vaccine in medical history. I mean, this is some crazy, like, Cold War shit where we're just like, all right, let's skip the animals. Let's give it to the children.
It was completely dire, though, too. I think that this was a time where people were, you know, becoming completely disabled, and it was like a panic, in which case yeah. I really relate to it during Corona. Like, it might not be, even if it's not the best, we were like, how can I get a part of a clinical trial? Like, people were right. doing whatever they could to, like, mm-hmm. ante up their veins, you know.
Only slightly related, but Mia Farrow had polio, so.
She did.
Did you learn that from watching the Allen versus Farrow yep. documentary?
Yes, I sure did. Too.
Which, yeah, she had polio.
I didn't realize it was such a recent thing until I heard Mia Farrow had it. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of our probably grandparents and parents
were terrified of it.
And had to get vaccinated.
Wow.
Like, that was like a requirement.
Yeah.
The Salk polio vaccine. So that was the one where they did a clinical trial involving a million children. Thankfully, was determined to be safe and effective. So this risk, this gamble paid off. We got the Salk vaccine. Later, however, in a tragic set of circumstances known as the Qatar incident, more than 260 people contracted polio from a vaccine produced by Qatar Labs. Two batches of that vaccine from that lab were found to contain, you guessed it, the live polio virus.
Oh, shit.
Which is not what you want. And then in 1955 of that year, the U.S. Surgeon General recommended that all polio vaccinations be suspended until a thorough inspection of each manufacturing facility and review of the procedures for testing vaccines had been completed. So, I mean, yes, if you're giving people live polio, we need to put a pause mm-hmm. and just check it out. And then in the late 1950s, Albert Sabin theorized that the weakened live virus polio vaccine would provide longer lasting immunity. So this is now a second vaccine. Mm-hmm. His vaccine was tested in field trials in the Soviet Union. Love it. Love a throwback. They're like,
let's just go to Russia.
They don't matter.
Let's just test on Caitlin's family in Russia. It's like, let's just go. They're poor.
Who cares? So they had field trials in the Soviet Union between 1957 and 1959, and it was eventually licensed by the United States in 1962. The Sabin, not sure how to say it, vaccine was endorsed by the American Medical Association and became the primary weapon for polio prevention in the United States by the end of the 1960s. So we had the first one, which was the Salk vaccine, then Sabine came along and was like, let's give him a little bit of live polio and see if mm-hmm. that knocks it out.
Oh my gosh.
Even though some cases of polio still occurred from this vaccine, it was primarily used because, you guessed it was inexpensive and mm-hmm. it was also easily administered. Now, however, with polio on the brink of eradication throughout the world, the Salk inactivated vaccine is the only product recommended for routine childhood vaccination in the United States. So we do not do the live polio vaccination anymore. If you do get a polio vaccine, it's the Salk one, which is like the chill one.
That's great.
So that's polio. And the only place to go from polio is to the German measles, of course.
Of course.
So here we are at the German measles. It's 1964. We haven't even taken a breath, really, from polio.
Mm-hmm. No.
And now we have
Got to learn German.
Now we have to learn German, unfortunately.
Ich liebe dich, baby.
Ich liebe dich, baby.
Ich liebe dich.
From my family to Sue's family. Leaving Russia, going to Germany.
So we're good. It's a real worldly episode.
It's gorgeous.
So in 1964, a global epidemic of rubella, also known as the German measles, spread to the United States. An estimated 12.5 million cases of rubella was reported in the United States, and 20,000 infants were born with birth defects as a result of the epidemic. So not good. Yeah. Since unborn fetuses were especially vulnerable to the virus, it was imperative that an effective vaccine be developed. Yes. In 1966, the former Serber directors Paul D. Parkman and Harry M. Meyer reported that they had developed the first effective experimental vaccine for rubella. So the Serber guys were like, hey, we got it, and we're going to dose it out.
We're the all-stars, so let's keep going.
Finally, the last sort of historical vaccine we'll talk about is the one for the whooping cough, which I've never understood why it's whooping, like why that's the term. Maybe, is whooping, it the sound?
Whooping, it's whooping cough. It's like, it's babies have it, and they have like this like cough that does, it almost sounds like a howl, like a dog woofing. It's so upsetting. And they can't catch their breaths. It's like, it might as well be called a heartbreak cough, because it's like you hear a child do it, you're like, I'm gonna kill myself too. It's so sad.
Yeah. I was always curious. I figured it had to be like the sound that was made when you had it. But again, it's such a weird word, whooping. The whooping cough, or, oh dear.
You can do it. Give it a try. It's phonetic.
Pertussis?
Pertussis.
Okay, close. Or
nope, you got it wrong. You can do it.
that's literally all she does. It's like, close.
And I love it's always it. Wrong. I need that.
So whooping cough or pertussis vaccine had been available since 1915, but results from its use were not entirely satisfactory. This is coming from the FDA website. They were not satisfied, and they will never be satisfied.
They weren't that great.
There were many concerns regarding the potency of the vaccine. Several tests were conducted during the 1940s on the potency and effectiveness of this vaccine in mice.
They're going to say in Russia, in mice. Thank God.
Oh, in mice. No. I mean, I was trying to call it back to our mice talk. All of us. We're all mice.
We're all mice.
Deep down. Why am I not
too proud to say I'm a mouse?
I'm a mouse.
A small Russian mouse.
I'm a mouse.
Small Russian mouse.
I'm a mouse musketeer.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. In 1944, the Biologics Control Laboratory developed a pertussis. Is that what we said? Pertussis vaccine?
Tussis.
Okay.
Pertussis.
Pertuss on this, bitch. What do you want me to say?
Particular.
Oh, okay. So it's 1944, middle of World War II. We developed a pertussis vaccine. By 1949, manufacturers were able to sell the whooping cough vaccine, approved on potency as well as on safety and sterility? How do you say that?
Sterility?
Sterility?
Sterility? Sterility. Yeah.
No.
Whatever that means. And the vaccine in use today was licensed by Cerber on July 31st, 1996. So we've upgraded it. We now have a vaccine for the whooping cough. Yay. I'm pretty sure. Don't most babies get the whooping cough vaccine?
Yes.
When they're born?
And also, they ask that like grandparents and parents, people visiting, they want to check if you have it.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, that was a big thing.
I think I got a booster when my nephew was born or something like that. Yeah.
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 Because I don't think they can get it to a certain age. And then you want to make sure anybody coming around to visit has that too.
Okay. Arden, do you want to talk about the reason why we're all here? Literally in a
Why do we exist, Arden? Please tell me.
Oh, my God. That's so, I don't know that you want somebody talking about that who's an agnostic, but here we go. So we're going to talk about the COVID vaccines. Yay, we love a COVID vaccine.
Yeah,
I got mine back in February. So good.
Okay, brag.
Just a humble brag.
I'm getting my second dose this week, so...
Moderna.
Very excited. Moderna. Thank you for asking. Yes, Moderna.
She is fierce. She.
Yeah, I've heard.
She knocked me on my ass.
Yeah.
Pfizer made me throw up.
Oh no.
I'd fuck her any day still.
Oh boy.
I keep coming back for more every time.
It's like
I would always come back for more Pfizer. I'd love.
Yeah.
So there are a couple different types of vaccines. There's the mRNA vaccine. which are a new type of vaccine to protect against infectious diseases. To trigger an immune response, many vaccines put a weakened or inactivated germ into our bodies. But not mRNA. Instead, they teach our cells how to make a protein, or even just a piece of a protein, that triggers an immune response inside our bodies. That immune response, which produces antibodies, is what protects us from getting infected if the real virus enters our bodies. Researchers have been studying and working with mRNA vaccines for decades. Interest has grown in these vaccines because they can be developed in a laboratory using readily available materials. This means the process can be standardized and scaled up. Adorable.
I love it. They're like, let's be efficient.
Mm-hmm. Making vaccine development faster than traditional methods of making vaccines. mRNA vaccines have been studied before for the flu, Zika, rabies, and fuck me up.
I couldn't tell you what that says.
Cytomegalovirus? CMV. As soon as the necessary information about the virus that causes COVID-19 was available, scientists began designing the mRNA instructions for cells to build the unique spike protein into an mRNA vaccine.
Yeah. So yeah. The thing with like the COVID vaccines, because there's a lot of criticism, not a lot of criticism, like there's obviously an anti-vaxxer movement and there's like a distrust in these vaccines. And one of the reasons that I've seen, and I'm sure we've all seen, is that it was developed so quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason that people may not understand is because it's not like we had to build a vaccine from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
We used the mRNA basically layout.
It's been around for like 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been
a very this is what the popular flu vaccine is. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. a popular type of vaccine. It's not new. We did not have to reinvent the wheel to create the Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson mm-hmm. and Johnson and the rest of that are coming up. It was a roadmap that already existed. They just had to figure out what was it about COVID-19 that made her a little special from the rest? Mm-hmm. And how could we take a little bit of that and put it a little bit over here? And that's why it was developed not over the course of several years.
It's because she's a spiky bitch.
She's mm-hmm. a spiky little
She's filled with
bitch.
Spikes.
Mm-hmm. She's filled with spikes. So that's why I wanted to put in the stuff about the mRNA, because I think that's helpful information to know that the vaccines are not like the polio vaccine mm-hmm. or the whooping cough or the German measles, where it was like, yeah, you just got some beakers and you're like, maybe this is a vaccine.
So it's different because it has like a non-active version of the actual virus in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And like, yeah, that protein in there is specific to the predominant strain of COVID that was initially out. So obviously now we know there are other strains, and that's very much like the flu, where, you know, we get a vaccine of the flu vac shot every year because the strain morphs and evolves, right? So the proteins change a little bit. So perhaps the vaccine you got last year may not fight off all of the strains of the flu, but usually the predominant ones. So that's what Pfizer
actually,
and Moderna.
Yeah, and the flu's even worse. Like the flu, you'll have, you know, they said people are upset about like 83% or 85%. They're like, the flu is 50%. Like the flu
You're lucky most years of the flu virus is good. The flu vaccine is like 35% effective. So like,
yeah. I mean, get it, of course, like to take care of yourself, but it's not. It's interesting. I feel like people are just kind of vaccine crazy right now. And so they're like hypersensitive and hyper obsessed with all this. But it hasn't been the flu's track record is just like, look, we're doing the best we can.
Yeah.
It's an insane virus that just keeps evolving. The virus is a living organism that is just trying to live its best life. And we
it's
are
just
really
trying to spread its wings.
And we don't want that for her.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. We're such bummers.
We want her to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we sure do. So just a little background on mRNAs.
So there are currently three approved vaccines. The Pfizer BioNTech, which is two shots given 3 weeks apart. You're considered fully vaccinated 2 weeks after the second shot. The Moderna, two shots given 4 weeks apart. Again, fully vaccinated after your second shot 2 weeks later. The Johnson & Johnson, which is currently on pause, is one shot and you're fully vaccinated after 2 weeks. Two vaccines are currently in phase 3 of their trials as AstraZeneca and Novavax.
Yeah, and I think AstraZeneca has been approved by other countries, but has not yet been approved by the United States. I think it's pretty big in the UK right now, if I understand correctly. But
yeah,
just goes to show there are other vaccines coming up the pike, and I imagine in a few months, one or both of them will be able to be distributed. But the ones that I see the most are Pfizer and Moderna. Obviously, Johnson & Johnson is going through her own moment right now. Mm. And so curious to see how that one turns out.
Yeah.
So that's the COVID vaccine. And I wanted to kind of close our episode with some of my favorite things, which are fun facts, fun facts, fun facts. And so on the FDA website, which I have a thing with government agency websites where most of them are awful. And every now and then we come across some gems. And weirdly enough, the FDA website was very informative. Like, again, most of these notes that we've talked about today have come straight from that website. And like, especially how they broke down the COVID vaccine information was also, I found to be pretty helpful. So, but they had on this website milestones of the FDA. Mm. And there's like, it's a huge list of like date, like years and things that happened that year. Some are boring. And I pulled some that I thought were interesting. So I'm going to just go through them. And we start, we're all ladies who lunch start, and that's in 1820. And so in 1820, 11 physicians met in Washington, D.C. to establish the U.S. Pharmacopoeia, which is the first compendium of standard drugs for the United States. So I love this idea. 1820, these 11 guys get together and they're like, let's develop a standard.
Let's get it together, guys. Let's get ourselves a standard.
Let's get it together. Let's get it together, please. Then in 1897, there the Tea Importation Act was passed, which providing for customs inspection of all tea entering U.S. ports at the expense of the importers. So, like, they're starting this off with, like, let's get our priorities straight. First, let's start inspecting the tea. Then we'll look at what poisons people. And I love that.
Yeah. Well, people are consuming way more tea these days than poison, unlike right now. We're much more pro-poison than tea in 2021.
Yeah. You're right.
But imagine if
we love our poison.
It was metaphorical tea, like gossip. Mm. Like,
and then, goss.
Yeah. Then that would be back to then. You're right, Sue.
Yeah. Imagine if they had to inspect all of that.
Oh my God. Let's inspect the goss. Is it legit or not?
That's a job that I want.
Tea.
I want that job.
Yeah.
I want that job. Absolutely.
You can take it. I need it. I need someone to inspect my tea and just tell me, like,
what are you doing?
Well, because I don't spread false goss. Like, that's embarrassing when the goss
is not
true.
I also absorb so much of the tea that I'm like, I'm false.
Okay, so the next one is in 1906, the Meat Inspection Act.
Oh,
so that is passed. Shocking disclosures of unsanitary conditions in meatpacking plants, the use of poisonous, again, preservatives, and dyes in foods, and cure-all claims for worthless and dangerous patent medicines were major problems leading to the enactment of these laws. So we were disgusting. We were disgusting. That's 1906.
Okay.
Then 1912, Congress enacted the Shirley Amendment to overturn the ruling in U.S. versus Johnson.
Of Shirley Temple.
Of Shirley Temple, you're right. She was a plague on us all. In that, the Shirley Amendment prohibited labeling medicines with false therapeutic claims intended to defraud the purchaser, a standard that was difficult to prove. And this was because Mrs. Winslow's soothing syrup for teething and Cockley? That's how you say that?
Colicky.
No idea.
Colicky. Sorry. I don't read. And colicky. Gosh. You know what I'm saying. Babies, unlabeled Yet it was laced with morphine, and that killed many infants. So again, we started killing the children.
Were they colicky? I'm just kidding.
But it didn't work to stop the colic. But they were true. The colic ended.
Many things ended.
Oh, I love that. Then I'm skipping ahead to 1950 for the Oleomargarine Act, which requires prominent labeling of colored oleomargarine to distinguish it from butter.
Oh, that's the stuff from the chips.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, the poop stuff. Oh,
the
no,
poop chips.
Or is it just... Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I just thought it was funny that we have a whole act about something and distinguishing it from butter.
That's so funny because
I can't believe it's not butter. Maybe that's...
I mean, they're saying it's not butter.
We don't want to get sued.
Yeah. So what are we going to call it? I can't believe. This one's fun. In 1993, revising a policy from 1977 that excluded women of childbearing potential from early drug studies, the FDA issued guidelines calling for improved assessments of medication responses as a function of gender. So they're like, you know what? Let's bring women of childbearing age into the fold, shall we? And I love that. So companies were encouraged to include patients of both sexes in their investigation, in their investigations of drugs, and to analyze any gender-specific phenomenon. This was in 1993 that we thought perhaps we should widen our scope.
Damn.
That's why there's nothing on ovarian cancer.
Really?
Yeah. Like, literally, they're just like, we don't know. You have it, you don't have it.
Like, that's why it's like birth control gives you blood clots is a new... is news to people, apparently.
Right.
And it's like, why?
Guys, we could die at all times.
My love, my life. We're women in the medical industry. Give me Johnson & Johnson. I have less likely of a chance to get a blood clot than I do right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then finally, our last fun fact, because I thought this was super funny. In 2013, Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Reauthorization Act was passed. And this establishes and reauthorizes certain programs under the Public Health Service Act and Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act with respect to public health, security, and all hazards preparedness and response. So in 2013, we passed a Preparedness Reauthorization Act. Hmm. And by golly, did it not come in handy.
Did they have before? Just like, we hope you get it together.
We're hoping that this just doesn't happen.
Just a fingers crossed. Hope it works out for y'all.
The fingers crossed act that we don't get another polio. You know?
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah. But those are my fun FDA milestones. And those are the end of our notes, y'all.
What do you think? Here's the thing. I think this is in no way a scam, not that you asked us, because
I don't think it's a scam.
I think that you have a ton of brilliant people working their asses off. I think you have a ton of scientists, a ton of doctors who are trying the best that they can to go as quickly as possible. I get this feeling that with these sort of vaccinations and with these testings, everything's going as fast as possible. The part that it gets tricky or stressful is when they try to then bring it to the masses. And the company that then distributes it or hands it out is either messing with the stuff to make it cheaper. Mm-hmm. So like not the doctor side, not the scientist side, or somebody just trying to push out really quickly and not realizing that, you know, this might be unhealthy. The morphine I don't love, but I'm sure that the doctor was like, if you give them a little bit of morphine, it's fine. Just can't give them a lot of morphine.
Like, a little whiskey and they'll go right to sleep.
They did that. Mm-hmm. They did that all the time. They're always drugging their babies. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think that the place where it becomes so stressful is that middleman. And that's who you have to govern. And I'm sure it was to the horror of the scientists and doctors that had all best intentions of trying to help people.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this interesting thing of trusting doctors and scientists, but not the pharmaceutical company, because there's money to be made in pharma. I mean, there's money to be made as doctors, but there's also money to be made as the pharmaceuticals, and like sort of the distortion and the distrust, rightly so, that we now have against pharmaceutical companies, because they are trying to bleed people dry for like basic medications.
They're dirty. They're awful.
They're dirty, dirty, dirty people.
Dirty horse.
And yet we have to rely on them to do this, to like we had to rely on the pharmaceutical industry to get us partly like the care for the vaccines and a lot of different like non-COVID related illnesses. Like we're you know, shackled to them in a not healthy way, I would say.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I don't think it's a scam. I think that I think there's areas for improvement, which is my hot take.
Lots.
And
yes.
But I am glad that we have a vaccine.
Also, I love Watch Dogs.
Mm-hmm. I love Watch Dogs. Watch over me.
Woof,
watch
woof, those dogs. You know?
Yeah, get them all. Woof, woof.
Woof, absolutely woof, woof.
Is done.
But I think you're right. I think we can end and conclude with calling this not a scam. Mm-mm. Even though scam. Y'all are the scam wild ladies, but
and we'll tell you if it's a scam. We'll tell you.
We will let you know. Yeah. I know people are like hesitant to take it, and they think that it's still too experimental. But this is not a scam. This is healthy. Mm-mm.
This is healthy. This is good. Hopefully, we can all kiss each other on the mouth very soon.
I'm kissing everyone on the mouth.
I will be kissing everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm kissing them on the ass. I'll just take it, give it.
I'll kiss them
you
anywhere.
Want.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're very easy going.
Wherever they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fine.
And with that, you guys, thank you so much.
Thanks for having
for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Again, to our sweet, sweet listeners, you can listen to Scam Wow, which again is such an amazing podcast where they talk all things scams. Truly, wherever you find your podcasts, but they are also under the More Banana Network. So check out More Banana, check out Scam Wow, check out our other sister podcasters. And in the meantime, listeners, if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. And if you feel so inclined, you can rate us and review and subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.